Whether you're Irish or not, happy St. Patrick's Day and welcome to a special episode of Musings on Golf. I'm your happy-go-lucky lad, Kelly Elbin, along with the lovely lass, Jenna Self, our executive producer. And folks, you're in for a lot of luck today, as we'll be joined shortly by Mike Golick Sr., who was the captain of the Notre Dame Fighting Irish football team in his senior year, and really almost more importantly, whose family foundation is preparing for its fifth annual golf tournament next month at the Warren Golf Course on the campus of the University of Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana. I have to tell you, I've got a little luck working my way this week, because on Thursday, I am teeing it up here at East Point Country Club in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, with David Young, longtime PGA of America professional, whose son Cameron captured his biggest professional title. What a display. What thrilling fashion that was on 17 and 18, the tee shot on the famous island hole that Cam hit, made birdie on that curling putt to tie Matt Fitzpatrick, and then the incredible 375-yard drive at 18. Fitzpatrick pushed it in the pine needles, couldn't make par, and sure enough, Cam Young comes up with his biggest win ever at the Players' Championship. I had reached out to his dad, who was a guest on Musings on Golf leading into the Ryder Cup last year. Cameron also was a guest coming out of the Ryder Cup, and his dad spends a lot of time down here in the winter months, and we've been trying to get together to play golf, and Thursday just happened to work out, and by coincidence, his son prevailed, so we're going to have a lot of fun things to talk about. It was really a tremendous Players' Championship. I am still of the belief, as I think the majority of those who follow the game closely, that there are four major championships, but Players isn't very far behind. And the more they played it there, 40-some years, we know that golf course, obviously 17, but 18 is such a strategically challenging finishing hole. And even if you hit a good drive, it calls for such a pinpoint second shot, and the greens fast, you got wind blowing all over the place. You saw Robert McIntyre on 16, the terrific par 5, chop a ball out of the rough and it scooted over into the water. So those last three holes are just fantastic finishing holes on a golf course that we've come to know extremely well. Before we throw it over to Mike Golick, a quick shout out to Mark Calcavecchia. Calc underwent hernia surgery last week. He's doing well, recovering, and looking forward to having the 1989 Open champion back out on PGA Tour champions very, very soon. Calc, we're thinking of you. Mike Golick Sr. loves to play the game, isn't particularly good at golf, but what he's good at is his love for the University of Notre Dame, and what he's good at is raising funds through his tournament that has brought a lot of celebrities, mostly obviously from the football side, former players at Notre Dame, to play in an event that raises money for five local charities in the South Bend area. And Mike, we've known him for a long, long time as, one half of Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN for, 17, 18 years. He now has his own show with his son, Mike Jr., and it's a good show. FanDuel is the network where you would find that, wherever that may be in your local audience, but they have a lot of fun, the two of them. And just a great conversation had with Mike. We'll hear that in just a minute. And on the backside, we're going to hear from Cameron Young. We're also going to hear a little bit from his mental coach, who has really helped Cameron quite a bit. We'll hear all of that right after you hear from our friends, our corporate partners at William & Harry and the Friars Golf Club. When golfer and entrepreneur Rhett Butler founded William & Harry Golf, he brought luxury, individuality, and performance to the game while giving back through support of veterans organizations and suicide prevention initiatives. This spring, William & Harry Golf unveils its 2026 collection, perhaps the most innovative, most comfortable, and most distinctive lineup of handcrafted golf shoes. They feature vibrant colors in both exotic python and ostrich, and classic golf colors for our Calfskins line of shoes, which have already been recognized by Golf Digest, comfort and quality. William & Harry is the luxury golf brand with a conscience, built on trust in our craftsmanship, our values, and our promise to reinvest in the communities we serve. When you choose William & Harry, you choose a brand that stands behind every product, every cause and the causes it supports. Visit WilliamandHarry.com, the luxury golf brand with a conscience. Is your golf life stuck in a bunker of country club hassles? Tired of the wait lists and the six-figure initiation fees? Well, at the Friars Golf Club, we take care of all of the hard work, planning exclusive trips and unforgettable rounds on top-rated courses, so all you have to do is show up, have fun, and make lifelong friendships on the first tee, the 19th hole, and far beyond. Our terrific 2026 lineup includes international destinations like Dubai and Scandinavia, plus top domestic resorts such as Sand Valley and Black Desert, and access to some great private clubs. Join the Friars Golf Club today. Email us at info@thefriars.com, the word musings in the subject line, to receive a $500 trip credit when you join. We invite you to stop dreaming and start living the ultimate golf experience with the Friars Golf Club. Well, the Notre Dame fight song is the personal anthem for our special guest on this 2026 St. Patrick's Day. He captained the football team in his senior year in South Bend, and while he went on to a successful career in the NFL and continues a terrific 30-year run in sports media, it's the special place founded by Father Edward Soren that is never far from his heart. He and his family are once again hosting a wonderful charity golf tournament next month on the campus. And he's with us to talk golf, the Fighting Irish, and whatever else may come up during our conversation. Mike Golick Sr., top of the morning to you on this St. Patrick's Day, and welcome to Musings on Golf.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much. Always enjoy talking a little bit of golf, a little bit of football, especially on St. Patrick's Day. How about that? I mean, yeah, neither one of us. Well, you have green on. You kind of have green working.
Absolutely.
I don't. That's my fault. That's my bad.
No worries. With a first name of Kelly, Mike, and with my dear mother, whose name was Mary Frances Kelly, if I'm not wearing some sort of green today, shame on me, right?
That's true. That is very true. Yeah. And certainly celebrating St. Patrick's Day at Notre Dame was always fun.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. We'll talk a little bit about the Subpar Classic that you and your family are going to put on for the fifth straight year in April at the Warren Golf Course on the campus at South Bend. But let's talk a little bit about St. Patrick's Day, Mike. I'm interested to know, for you, you played at Notre Dame, you matriculated there for 4 years, double major, I believe, Mike. What was St. Patrick's Day on campus like while you were there in the early to mid 80s?
Well, I mean, that was also right around spring ball as well. So it was tough to get too crazy, but back then, Notre Dame had a lot of dorm parties, in the basement of the dorms or in rooms connected, there would be parties. So certainly something there. Corby's was always a big hit, not the Corby's that's there now that you have to basically take a cab to or an Uber to, more downtown. We had a Corby's. We had what was called Five Points at Notre Dame. There were five bars within walking distance, and Corby's was one of them. And it's unbelievable to think back of how small Corby's actually was and all the people that had fit in there. It had a pool table that after a certain time, they put a piece of plywood over it so people could stand on it and you could have more room in Corby's. That's how small the place was. But I frequented that joint a whole lot of times.
I bet you did. Is that the Corby's Irish pub that's featured in the movie Rudy?
Yes. Yes. That's when Rudy was here, my brother Bob was a freshman. So yes, that's the Corby's that's right by campus. Again, unbelievably small, but man, was packed all the time.
By the way, did you like the movie Rudy? Did you cry? Did it move you like a lot of people it did?
It was a bit Hollywoodish in some of the parts, knowing how some of the parts, it's a great story, obviously. Oh, yeah. a player really who had no business being a Division I athlete, you know, being a walk-on and actually getting into a game and the fight he had getting into Notre Dame academically. Like I said, my brother Bob was a freshman at that point and was a starting linebacker. It was a good story. Again, some of the football stuff, because I knew my brother was there and what really happened, was a bit embellished, but I get it from the Hollywood side.
Yeah, and I liked Sean Astin. I thought he did a really good job as Rudy Rudiger.
Oh, yeah. Vince Vaughn in it as well. Pretty wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, young Vince Vaughn.
Hey, Mike, let's talk about the 5th annual Golic Subpar Celebrity Golf Classic. It's going to be held at the Warren Golf Course on the campus at Notre Dame. It's during the football's legacy weekend.
Yeah.
In this case, April 24th and 25th. Mike, how did the Subpar Classic start, and who benefits from it?
Well, I mean, it started really my wife, who I met at St. Mary's the first day of school, actually. And we started dating senior year and got married my third year in the league. Been together going on 39 years. We have a house at Notre Dame that we stay half the year in Arizona, half the year at Notre Dame. And it's kind of like the meeting point where our family, our kids all come with their significant others and their kids, and just a place where we can be. And we thought, you know, we went to Notre Dame, but it's really the South Bend area. And we thought that we wanted to give back to the South Bend area. So again, it was my wife's idea to put on this golf tournament and have all the proceeds go to South Bend charities. So the golf tournament itself benefits 5 charities, but then we have other donations that come in that benefit another 16 to 20 charities year round, quarterly. So we help a total of 20 to 25 different charities every year, with usually a couple $100,000 splitting it up in different ways. But we wanted to go local. We wanted to help local, smaller charities where, you know, not that we don't like to help the bigger charities, the national ones, but the smaller ones, you know, $5,000 is like gold to them, you know, so we can help a lot of different entities with $5,000, $10,000, $20,000. So, like I said, it was really my wife's idea, and we used to have it in June, but we really had the idea to kind of team up with the football team, who has been great to us. Marcus Freeman has been in our tournament every year. He's come at the party the night before, help us auction off things. So we change it to Legacy Weekend, the Blue Gold, the spring game weekend. We change it to right. that weekend, and we're kind of partnering with the football program as well to get more eyes on this.
Not only more eyes, Mike, but I would imagine you have more alumni, players who come back.
Yeah.
I would think you have a pretty good field, right?
Well, normally, you know, in one of these golf tournaments, you have like one celebrity per fivesome. And we tried to keep that part of it low so it's not a 7-hour round, right? Yeah. So we'll do like only 18 to 20 fivesomes, but then that's fivesomes, but then we added another 10 fivesomes of just legacy players. So another 50 to 70 just former players that are going to join us at the Warren. So the paying customers who pay for their foursome are going to get to be around a whole lot more former players, not just 18 of them, but upwards of 68 to 70 of them now. And they'll be able to go to the football program has a party after the Blue Gold game that evening, which was mixed in with our foundation. So the people that are helping us raise money will be able to be with these players on the golf course and be with the former players at this party as well.
That's terrific, Mike. Mike Golic Sr. joining us here on Musings on Golf. And Mike, as you well know, the Warren course there is a heck of a golf course. Hosted the 2019 U.S. Senior Open.
Yep.
Also, the 2010 U.S. Women's Public Links. And the golf course has only been around about 25 years. This is a
yes.
terrific layout, Mike.
Yep. The start of the 2000s, that's when it came out. My wife and I were at the Senior Open. We actually got to golf it the next day when they leave the course basically, as you know, the same after tournaments. And people come on and golf it. And I golfed it. Lost a ton of balls that day like I normally do. But it was very cool. To watch that. I had no Cameron Young drives on the 18th hole like he did in the Players to secure that win over Fitzpatrick.
That drive was
375 or something.
Yeah.
He hit the roll perfectly. I mean, oh my gosh, that was incredible. And Oberg, how he kind of unfortunately fell off the pace when he was a couple up. Ludwig, he struggled a bit, but congrats to Cameron Young for that. But it was great watching the tournament there and then playing at kind of the senior level of how the course was set up. It was pretty wild.
Gives you a very different perspective, doesn't it, Mike, of playing under those circumstances than a quote normal round of golf?
Well, I mean, the biggest difference is when there's you know, trash from the tee to the fairway. All of a sudden, you're playing where the seniors play, and even though they're seniors, they're not tour guys. It's still a longer way. Your tee shot just to reach the fairway is you got to smoke it. These guys do it like it's nothing. You got to get everything into it just to reach the fairway. That was my issue because I certainly don't have the drive, the length that I had used to.
Mike, I've got a little luck working on my side. I had both David Young, Cameron's father, who really was his teacher growing up, and Cameron as guest before the Ryder Cup and coming out of the Ryder Cup last year.
Oh.
And I'm playing with his dad, David, on Thursday, just really by coincidence.
Wow.
So I'm excited to be able to talk to dad and get a sense of what the moments were like and the feeling, because boy, his boy, the golf, the tee shot he hit at 17, Mike, right?
I mean,
and then the drive.
The drive, the driving of the players today, it's got to, obviously it's a combination of equipment, of golf balls, and of player, because I mean, these guys aren't overly large. And, you know, their swing is a smooth swing, and the ball just, it's unbelievable. It's just stunning. And obviously, hitting the roll right on the downhill, you know, going right to left was, I mean, you just saw that ball just following the fairway. That was really, really something else. And Fitzpatrick, unfortunately, knocked it through the fairway, put it in the pine needles, and had a tough second shot. But it is amazing how these guys hit the ball today.
You obviously follow the game, the PGA Tour, closely.
Yeah.
Do you watch a lot of tournaments? Do you have a favorite player? Do you have a favorite event?
I love watching Scottie Scheffler because part of him golfs like us. His feet move all over the place, right? I mean, I love watching that. And the ball goes freaking straight. It's like, okay, you don't have to have the perfect swing. You just have to have your swing that you work on over and over again, because I have a wicked slice. I watch videos and save videos all the time on trying to fix my slice. I had my shoulder replaced about 10 months ago. I'm hoping that will do it. I'm hoping for a friggin' miracle that all of a sudden I got a bunch of hardware in my shoulder. It'll straighten my drive out. But I love watching Scheffler. We keep wondering, you know, because Tiger was my favorite golfer. We used to have him when I did show with Greeny. It was Mike and Mike. We had Tiger on a few times. He was great. And everyone's like, who's the next Tiger? Who's the next Tiger? And before Scottie Scheffler, was it Rory? Who was it? We couldn't find anybody. Now it's Scheffler. But still, some of the things Scheffler's accomplished, you put it up next to Tiger and you're still like, it's like in the NBA when you put up a record next to Wilt Chamberlain. You're going, oh, my God. You know, players have a long way to go to catch some of these top guys. But, yeah, I love Scheffler because I love watching his feet go all over the place and he still hits it beautifully.
How about tournament-wise? Is it the Masters? Is it an Open Championship? Do you have one that you're like, okay, this is the one major?
I mean,
or is it the Ryder Cup maybe?
I love the Ryder Cup. I love when there's competition.
Sure.
I would say maybe our U.S. fans got a little carried away. There's cheering and then there's going a little too far. You got to be careful with that. But I do love the team aspect. I love the different variations of golf, the match play, the four ball, and the different things like that. So the Ryder Cup is definitely my favorite. One of my favorite courses is Pebble Beach.
Yeah.
It's an incredible, incredible track. And I went and watched Notre Dame in Ireland, and I golfed a couple of tracks there.
Yeah.
I would love to golf the old course at St. Andrews in Scotland. I would love to, even though I don't know if a caddy would stay with me the whole time after I hit some bad shots or if he would just leave.
You referenced the shoulder surgery. You've been out a while. Are you and you, I think you told me also you play anywhere from 20 to 30 rounds of golf a year when healthy. Mike, are you planning to play in your event next month?
Yeah. I'll be able to play. I'll probably get a few rounds in here in Arizona before I go there. I won't golf great. That's what we call, why we call it the subpar. We don't mean birdie below par. We mean our golfing is subpar. our golfing is not great. That's what it means.
And that's
so,
okay,
or,
right?
or if we, it, yeah, that's okay. It's exactly right. Listen, I mean, I play bogey golf. If I play bogey golf, I'm happy. That's basically a 90. And if I shoot 90, high 80s, low 90s, I'm happy. I'm good. I just want to be good enough to try not to hold up the people I'm playing with by looking for my ball, or things like that, because I don't play enough where I'm going to get significantly better, right? I mean, 20, 30 times at that's on the high end. When I go there, I'll hit a few balls on the range, but I don't go practice on the range a lot. So I'm really not going to get a lot better. I just like to be serviceable.
Did you get started in golf? Did you play at all while you were playing in the NFL?
Oh yeah, I did. It's actually when I played at Notre Dame some. They have the Warren wasn't around then. It was the Burke, which is kind of like the like a. A really fun track if you're a student.
Yeah, right.
It was cheap to play there, and I still play it. My house is actually really close to there. I love going to just hit two, three balls a hole on that. I'll go to the Warren as well. But I golfed a little bit there. Then I golfed in the NFL when I was with the Eagles most of my career. Ron Jaworski, who was the quarterback in Philadelphia, he owned more than a few golf courses in the Philadelphia area. So he always let us go golf at him. Now, I was bigger than, obviously, I was more my playing weight of 280, 300 pounds. And I liked to have a few beers when I was playing. So I didn't take the game very seriously. But that's where I knocked it around, really started to golf more, was when I was in Philly.
Yeah, and Jaws is the most interesting guy, to your
Yeah.
point. He's owned and he still owns, I want to say, upwards of 8 to 10
Yeah.
golf courses throughout the Philly, Jersey area. That's really been an incredibly successful second career for Ron.
Oh, it's been great. And he does so much great work with charities there as well. I would, even after I was done playing and in the media, I would go back and play in his golf tournament. One used to be down in Atlantic City all the time. Now it's back in Philly. Yeah, I love supporting Jaws and what he does.
Hey, you grew up outside of Cleveland. As you mentioned, your brother Bob played at Notre Dame. Your son, Mike Jr., went on and played at Notre Dame. For you, was there ever any question that you would play at Notre Dame? Were you recruited heavily by other schools?
Oh
Did you
yeah,
think
yeah,
of, did you think
yeah.
about going to somewhere else?
I didn't really think about going anywhere else. I was recruited very heavily around the
Yeah.
country, but I got to see Notre Dame from a perspective of a 12-year-old, 12-year-old to 15-year-old. My brother Bob was there. My eyes were kind of wide, and then my brother Greg went there the year before I went there. So now I got to see kind of players that were more peers, more on my level. And I got recruited by the USC's of the world, the Texas's, the UCLA's, the Miami's, Michigan. I actually took a trip to Michigan my junior year, a visit. And that was really to keep my options open, depending on when, if Notre Dame would offer me. And Jerry Faust, the coach, then I was actually the first recruit. He was the new coach when I was a freshman, and I was the first recruit to commit under him. He called me on. Now, this is back when you didn't start your trips until after your senior year's game. So basically, November of after your senior year is when you started taking trips. And he called me on Thanksgiving after my senior year of football ended and offered me a scholarship, and I accepted there. So yeah, and like I said, my wife went to St. Mary's, my wife's sister went to St. Mary's, my son Mike played there, my son Jake played football there, my daughter Sydney swam there. So we've had ties to Notre Dame since my brother Bob was a freshman there in 75 until my daughter graduated in 2016. Now I have a couple of nieces at St. Mary's as well, so the legacy continues.
Absolutely. Was growing up, like, it sounds like it was a very competitive family. Had to have been, right?
Yeah, it was. Not really with each other. Bob was 6 years older than me. And that's when you're 16 and 10, that's a huge difference, right? My brother Greg and I were a little closer. We would be on the same team at times, but we were in sports nonstop. And and I wish the youth would do this more, is play multiple sports instead of
Agree.
just sticking to one. we, whatever season it was, that's what we played.
Why do you, feel that way, Mike? What is it simply making you more of a well-rounded person?
Yes.
Why do you feel that way?
It absolutely is. You're working different muscles too. You're going to become without question, a better athlete by playing more sports. But there's so much pressure now that coaches and parents put on kids to really stick to one sport because, and listen, I get it to a point. Not everybody has money to send their kid to college. So you try and get them a scholarship. You know, and I think coaches and parents feel if the kid plays soccer year round or baseball year round or hockey year round, they'll have a better chance of getting a scholarship in that sport. That was unheard of when we were growing up. And even when my kids were growing up, they switch sports all the time. I just think and if you look at the draft in the NFL every year, I'd say upwards of 90% of the players played multiple sports in middle school and in high school before they got to college and really concentrated on one.
Good point about the different muscles, right? You're just developing, your body's developing, the way you think and approach strategically, right?
Oh, listen, I played baseball, I wrestled, I played football, I ran track. And I found that wrestling, and I wrestled all the way through college as well, that wrestling helped football so much, especially if you were a lineman with the leverage on the line of scrimmage. So without question, working on the different talents it takes in each sport help you become a more well-rounded athlete.
I want to revisit Notre Dame just for a second. I mentioned before we went on the air that my daughter Megan went to Bethel College, one town over in Mishawaka, Indiana, and then worked in South Bend for a nonprofit and loved it, right? For you, Mike, what is it about Notre Dame? She enjoyed going on campus, going to games, but she was not necessarily a student. What is it about that place for you and your family?
I think the last word you just said, it's family. Everybody, when they hear Notre Dame, they think of a big place. They don't realize there's only 8,500 undergrads there. You can walk from one end of the campus to the other in 10, 15 minutes tops. It's a smallish school that actually used to have a road cut through it, and they stopped that. So it's just all walking on the campus. And there really is that feeling of, at Notre Dame, an athlete, their freshman year, you can't room with another athlete. You have to room with a normal student, at least.
That's still
for
the case now.
I you know what? Don't hold me to that. I'm not positive. Yeah. But for the longest time, it was where you had to room with a normal student, and then you could go along your way, your second, third, and some stayed with regular students, some didn't. It was just what. But you blended with everybody. You had to go to class. You had to go to class. So you were always interacting with the regular students there, not just athletes. There are no separate sports athletes for sports players. They're all you're in with the regular crowd. And it's just a family atmosphere. And that's what I loved about it. And obviously my parents loved the fact that it was a great academic institution.
No question about it. Mike Golic Sr., you mentioned about being recruited by Coach Faust, who made his mark at Moeller High School in Cincinnati. And but most recently, on March 4th, we lost Coach Holtz after an incredible life. Lou lived to 89. While you were recruited by Coach Faust, I would imagine you've got a story or two that you could share about Coach Lou Holtz.
Well, I mean, Lou Holtz, I love the magic tricks that he would do, right?
Oh,
Tearing up the newspaper, that was really, really, but the message he sends along with it. And also, I don't think people realize two things about Lou Holtz. The play like a champion sign that's at the bottom of the stairs when so many times you see going down the stairs, player hitting the play like a champion sign. People think that sign was there when Newt Rockne was there. That sign wasn't there until Lou got there. Lou put that sign up. That sign wasn't even there when I was there. Now, the sign started a long time ago at Oklahoma, who had that placard up in their locker room. But Notre Dame, Lou Holtz put it up when he got there. So that's number one. Number two, when Lou got there, Notre Dame came off some rough years that we had, my years there, with Jerry Faust. And again, Jerry Faust was a great guy, maybe a little over his head coming from high school to college, But as I've always said, we were the ones on the field, you know, that ultimately had to produce, and we didn't well enough. So it's a combined looking in the mirror there. So Notre Dame had certainly fallen my years. And for Lou to bring that back up again, the Play Like a Champion placard, but he also took the names off the back of the jerseys. He said, we're going to learn to play as a team. We're not going to have names on the back of our jerseys. And that's still how it is today. That was with Lou. And now there are bowl games where they'll put the names on the jerseys and stuff. But for the most part, regular season, they won't have the names on the jersey. And Lou Holt started that.
And the thinking there, Mike, is you're representing Notre Dame larger than yourself.
It's a team. Yeah, it's a team atmosphere. You win by being a team, not as an individual. And that's what he wanted to get through everybody's head.
Mike, most people obviously know you from 17 or 18 years when you and Mike Greenberg hosted Mike and Mike, 25 years at ESPN. But you played, as you mentioned, you played at Notre Dame. You played, 10 years in the NFL as a defensive lineman?
Nine. Yeah.
Mike, what was it like for you to go from a defensive lineman in the National Football League to the media side? And I'm wondering, was that something that you actively pursued? Did you want to be the media guy after all the years of answering the questions?
I had absolutely no clue I would be in the media. Zero. While I was still playing, especially when I was in Philly, I ran all the quarterbacks had a show, right? And yeah. I had a segment on Randall Cunningham's show called Golic's Got It. It was kind of an amusing look at the upcoming opponent. Like, we were going to go play Cleveland. So I went to a dog pound. I ate Alpo and hung out with the dogs, like the dog pound in Cleveland.
Really did eat Alpo.
Yeah, I did. I did. It was horrible. Before we played San Francisco, I went to an old mine, like the 49ers. And right time, right place. It won a local Emmy. That segment. So ESPN, now I was in Philly, not far from Connecticut. ESPN was like, hey, in the off season or in your bye weeks, do you want to do some stuff with us? And I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? So I started doing some stuff with them. I had no clue I was going to get into it. Then I played with the Dolphins, and that was the end of my career. I retired in 94. And I got an offer from ESPN right away to call college football games. I had never done that, but I'm like, sure. And I got an offer to go to Arizona and do local morning radio. And I was like, okay, sure. So I did local morning radio. I did national college games, 3 years of local radio, and then ESPN Radio started their first morning show nationally. So mm-hmm. I moved to Bristol, Connecticut, and actually my first show – my first year was with Tony Bruno,
sure.
long time sports broadcaster, who I actually knew when I played in Philly. So he and I worked a year together, and then he left, I think, to go to Fox. And I was looking for another partner, and that's when Greeny and I ended up together for that long stretch run. But I really had no, it was like, do as I say now, not as I do. I tell players, hey, try and have a plan for when you're done playing. I had no plan. I thought I was going to play forever, right?
Sure,
and
of course.
People always say, when did you retire? And I'm like, no. I'm like 95% of the league, of the players. The league retired me. You know what? I didn't have a say. I wanted to keep playing. I wanted to play a 10th year, an 11th year, a 12th year, but nobody called anymore. We'd all love to go out on our own schedule, but it doesn't work that way.
Hey, Mike, going to the media side, did you have a mentor? Did someone help you, or did you just learn as you went?
I just learned as I went. You know, they're really the only media people, former players in media then, were analysts. Like, I did college football right away. There weren't many doing 4-hour radio shows. So I was really kind of flying by the seat of my pants. And I learned that just for years, it sounds like the biggest cliche in the world, but like my dad always told me, just be yourself. Some people are going to like you. Some people aren't going to like you. You're never going to have a perfect show. You know, if you make a mistake, own up to it, you know, and just be yourself. And that's the way I lived. I always tried to do a show like I was sitting in a restaurant or a bar just talking to people, not talking at people, but talking to them. And, it seemed to work.
Like, I just finished reading a terrific book on John Madden and Pat Summerall and how they became the greatest duo
Yeah.
in TV, in NFL sports history. And to your point, in terms of kind of learning, Summerall originally, when I think while he was still with the Giants, but then later, he was an analyst on
Yes.
games, and then
Yes.
he became a play-by-play guy
Yep.
eventually with Coach Madden. And so you think part of that is you have to be versatile, don't you, Mike? You have to be versatile in the what you
The
cover. You have to learn a lot more, don't you?
way I approached it, and again from my parents, especially my dad, is if you're asked, can you do something, say yes. Even if you
Yeah.
can't, learn it, right? But get your foot in the door. It was like when I got cut from the Houston Oilers. I got cut on a Tuesday. I signed with the Eagles on a Thursday, got there on a Friday, 2 days before a game. So started to learn the defense, but really didn't know the defense. So I was dressed for the game Sunday. We were playing the Cardinals, and it was in Philly. And I had barely learned any of the defense, but our defense that first half was playing very poorly. So in the locker room at halftime, Buddy Ryan was railing the defense. Then he said, "Go, look, you ready to go?" And I was like, "Yep, got it all down, know everything." I didn't know anything. I barely knew the defense at all, but I'm like, I'm not going to say no. I'm going to say yes, and I'm going to go do my best to learn it. Same with learning local morning radio. I got to know the mid relief of the Diamondbacks, the third line of the Coyotes. And so I got to put my time in, and I had just finished playing, so I still knew other professional athletes and other sports to call them and just try and get more knowledge. And I could always come from it. It doesn't matter what pro sport you played in. I could always come for it in the locker room or on their field to play from the side of the athlete and their mentality. So I always had that in my hip pocket.
And I would also think, Mike, that when you get to the level of ESPN, you better know your stuff. You can't fake your way through it.
No, you cannot fake your way through it. People will call you out. Now, when I was playing, there was no social. When I was first started this, there was no social media, so it was tougher for people to call you out. Nowadays, I mean, they call you out in a second. I mean, so yeah, you definitely have to know what you're talking about. You can't BS your way through it.
All right, we're winding down our time with Mike Golic Sr. here on Musings on Golf. So, Mike, I'm going to throw a few questions at you,
Okay.
and then we're going to wrap it up with a question I ask all of my guests.
Okay.
The first question was going to be your favorite golfer. I've already heard that with Mr. Scheffler. And give me somebody else from a tour player who you follow, whether it's a McIlroy or somebody you're like, wow, this guy is fun to watch. Love what he does.
I like Morikawa. I like what I know he just had to miss that tournament with his with a back, but I like him. Young player, really solid player, very consistent. So I like watching him. Rory obviously is fun to watch as well. I watch everybody, obviously. It's tough for me to say I really have a favorite. I love watching the majors. I love, here's what I love. I love when it's bad weather at a major. And I love when players struggle like we struggle all the time. I love when they become human, right? And they're playing in bad weather and bad conditions, and it's really tough for them. I love to see that.
Mike, I went over last May with seven other buddies. We played 10 golf courses in Scotland and England, and it was bad a couple of days. To your point, man, when the wind kicks up over there
Oh.
and the rain, I don't the golf course itself, the golf courses are painful enough, hard enough. You
Yes.
throw Mother Nature in there, Mike. Come
Well,
on.
yeah, and I know I'm not good enough to hit a low liner into the wind, right?
Right.
My ball is my ball, right? And I'm not playing the wind or part or shaping a shot. I'm hitting my shot, and whatever happens with Mother Nature happens.
Yeah, the Golic shot may not be shaped as
No.
properly as Colin Morikawa's, right?
No, it is not. No, it is
All right.
not.
All right, Mike, toughest offensive lineman you faced in your playing days in the NFL?
Probably Dwight Stevenson, the center for the
Dolphins.
Miami Dolphins, Hall of Famer, played with no gloves, no tape, nothing on his hands. He had some of the best leverage. I and that's where my wrestling background just helped me keep my head barely above water with him. And I was just trying to survive when I played him. His leverage was unbelievable.
There's a reason why he became
a great player.
Reason why he became a Pro Football Hall of Famer, right?
Without a doubt. He would leverage you and throw players like he was the strongest player in the world, but it was leverage. He was amazing.
All right, better golfer, Mike Golic Sr. or Mike Golic Jr.?
Well, Mike hits it further than I do. He hits it a mile. Now, if it goes straight, that's a question. He's definitely a better iron player than I am. He hits really, really good moonshots. So as tough as it is and begrudgingly as it is, I'd probably say he is.
Who keeps their emotions in check better on the golf course between dad and son?
Oh, me, without question. When I was doing radio at ESPN and lived in Bristol, Connecticut, the next town over, Farmington, had a little mini golf course that was right on the river. And we would go over as a family, me, my wife, both sons, Mike, Jake, and Sydney, my daughter. And we would play putt-putt. Mike would lose his mind. One point he lost his mind, he threw the putter in the river. That's how tough that began. And once we saw how it affected him, we just goaded him. My son Jake was the great at just kind of twisting the knife on somebody. Yeah, and we would get Mike completely thrown off his game to the point where he threw a putter in the river.
I know what you're talking about. I've had a couple of instances, Mike, where for some reason the club has slipped out of my hands.
Yeah.
You know that happens. It happens,
yeah.
Mike Golic.
Right, right. We'll go with that story.
Let's go with that. You were born, I think, in 62. I was born in 60.
Yep.
We're right around the same age. Mike, in your lifetime, who's the best Notre Dame football player that you've seen?
Oh, probably Joe Montana.
Yeah.
I would say Joe. Again, Joe was there with my brother Bob. And Joe, at one point, was barely even on the depth chart and worked his way up to do what he did. He was absolutely incredible to watch, especially when times were toughest. Another one, and I have a funny story about it, Tim Brown. Tim Brown, the obviously college Hall
Great
of Famer, NFL
yeah.
Hall of Famer.
Great.
When I was a senior, I was one of the captains. Tim Brown was a true freshman out of Texas. And our first game, his freshman year, he was returning the kickoff. We played Purdue at Purdue. And so he's just on campus and he's returning kicks. He gets the opening kickoff. He fumbles it. First time he touches a ball, he fumbles it. Purdue recovers on like the 5-yard line. They're running off the field. Now it's a quick change. We thought our offense was going to run on the field. The defense is going on. I'm running on and I'm like, listen, I'm senior, I'm a captain. I got to say something to this kid, right? So I stop him. I look at him. I pat him on the butt. I said, Tim, don't worry about it. You're going to have plenty of opportunities to do your thing. It's all right. Keep your head up. He says, okay, whatever. And he keeps running. I keep running and I shake my head and say to myself, that kid's never going to make it.
Hey, you can't get them all, right?
Well, it goes on to become one of the greatest in college and the NFL. And a great dude, by the way. He's come to my golf tournament as well. Just such a nice guy. But going back, I would say Joe Montana. Yeah.
All right, two final questions. On the campus at Notre Dame, for you personally and maybe for your family in general, what's your favorite spot?
Is it probably,
the Grotto?
Got to be the Grotto. I mean, the Grotto is just such a peaceful, reflective place that no matter what you have going on in your life, whether it's all good or bad, it's a place to go to kind of exhale and take a breath. And everybody knows what the Grotto is for. Everybody understands and respects the Grotto. So when you go there, you have your time to the people you're with or to yourself, however you choose to go about it. But it is one of the most peaceful places I've ever been to.
Mike, for those who have not been on the campus at Notre Dame, what is the Grotto? Tell people what it is and what it means to with the campus.
The Grotto is a place for prayer. It's like a carved out, almost like a small cave where you can light candles and go there and just be reflective and pray. It's right behind the Basilica, the church at Notre Dame. And they'll have mass there every now and then as well. They'll set up chairs and have mass. It's a take. Why am I blanking on the movie right now? Oh my God, that it's kind of built from. And this is okay. Horrible of me for being
we'll
from
cut it
Notre
out.
Dame since 1975. Oh, that's all right. You can leave it in. To not remember the movie that it came from. But it's a very famous place, the Grotto. And it's just, again, you can donate and make whatever donation you want. You can light a candle. There's kneelers there to pray. There's benches there to sit. And again, everybody understands why you're there. And to be reflective and respectful while you're there.
Mike, final question. Oh, thank you so much for your time today. It's been great. It's a question I ask all of our guests. If you could play with three other individuals, Mike Golic Sr., whether those three are still with us or they're deceased, and it could be family members, it could be great players, who would those three be, and where would you tee it up in a really cool, magical round?
Oh, boy. Where would I tee that up? I'd probably go to Pebble Beach. Oh, no, you know what? I'd go to the old course at St. Andrews and probably, again, like I said, lose a lot of balls. I think I would probably golf with Newt Rockne would be one. You know, another one, I went to one of their practices and when I was at ESPN and really, really enjoyed learning from him, Dan Gable,
wrestler,
the
sure.
great
Iowa.
Wrestler who had one loss in his career, his senior year at the NCAA championships, yeah. And then went on to win gold at the Olympics. I would just love, and I have no idea if he golfs. I have no clue. I have no clue if Newt Rockne golfs, but I would just love to be around him and just chat with him. I think it would be incredible. And then I think one of my favorite, I have two favorite actors that I would take either one from my era, Tom Hanks and Denzel Washington. I think I would take one of those guys, probably the one who wanted to golf more than the other. But I would take one. Those are my two favorite actors of my time. I know that's a weird grouping, but yeah, that would probably be my foursome.
That would be a great foursome or fivesome. By the way, what would you ask or talk to Coach Rockne about?
Just the time, you know, just the times and just his strategy of just how different coaching was back then, and traveling on the train to go everywhere, and just how different the times were then, and how you dealt with athletes and dealing with athletes. I know obviously during my time, but how you dealt with athletes, and obviously he's so well revered, but, and obviously afterwards. So at the time, you know, not so much. His legend obviously grew over time, but I love coaches. That's why it would be Gable as well, is to just their inner workings and what motivates them.
Mike, GolicFamilyFoundation.com, I believe, looks to be the place where one could go to register for the Subpar Classic, to donate towards the charities that you support. Is that the best website to learn more and to register?
Yes. Yeah, it definitely is. Like I said, we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, wherever all the kids know to grow and go and stuff like that. I'm horrible at that stuff, but I'm always told where to go. But that's the place to go to find us, both on Instagram and on Twitter. It's gone well. It usually sells out, but where everybody can get involved is the silent auction that we have. We put it online. So not nice. Just people at the tournament can bid on it. Everybody can bid on it online. So and that certainly helps more people have a chance.
For St. Patrick's Day, Mike Golic Sr., will you possibly raise an ale somewhere and toast the Fighting Irish? Or how will you spend the day?
I will definitely raise a glass. Yes.
Yes.
Beer is my choice without question. So yes, I will definitely have a beer. It'd be better too, if I can find a place that has a green beer. So I would, yes. I would definitely do that. No doubt about that.
Mike Golic Sr., cannot thank you enough. This has been terrific, and best of luck to you and your family with the foundation supporting the Subpar Classic next month. Great work, and keep it going.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much. Enjoyed it.
Our friends at William & Harry are always looking for ways to stand out in the crowd. So for anyone who belongs to a country club, William & Harry can have your shoes private labeled to fit your specific needs. The same applies to your company or any organization you might be affiliated with. This makes you a clear winner. Why? Well, you have a better quality shoe that feels great, and you have the logo of your club, company, or organization on your shoes that really makes you stand out on the golf course. To learn more, visit williamandharry.com today and be sure to input our promotional code 15OFF, M-O-G, for a 15% discount at williamandharry.com. Golf is more than your scorecard, the brand of clubs you play, or the clothes you wear. Golf is a journey where every round is a memory, filled with friends old and new. The Friars Golf Club is where those lifelong friendships are made, on the first tee, in the 19th hole, and far beyond. Exclusive trips, unforgettable rounds, and the very best people. Indeed, great courses are simply better with great company. So join the Friars today. To learn more, email us at info@thefriars.com and put the word musings in the subject line to receive a $500 trip credit when you join. So we invite you to stop dreaming and start living the ultimate golf experience at the Friars Golf Club. Welcome back to Musings on Golf. Mike Golick Sr., thank you so much. That was a terrific interview. Covered a lot of ground. And whether you want to hear that interview, subscribe to that interview with Mike, or look at any of the archived interviews that we have, go to Spotify. Go to any of your favorite platforms for podcasts, and you will find Musings on Golf. Bam Rinyoung, he got it done. The little that I've spent around him and talked with him, it's clear that he is tough on himself at times. And I was fascinated by the story that Adam Shupak wrote on golfweek.com. Go there if you want to read the entire story. I strongly encourage you to. Last February of 25, Cameron hired Dr. Brett McCabe to be his mental game coach. And here are a couple of things that McCabe had to say about working with Cameron. He said he was pretty low in belief. This is when McCabe first started working with Cameron. After the WM Phoenix Open February of 25, he was pretty low in belief, struggling like guys do. And we just got back to some basic processes. It was just an evolution. He puts a lot of expectation and pressure on himself because he knows his standard can be so high. Players of his caliber don't realize oftentimes that standard is not always achievable. Like 80% outcome could be really good. Well, that doesn't mean we strive for 80%. But we have to accept it, not allow the negative shots to build up. A lot of Bob Rotella in that, by the way, as far as approaching top players. You're just not going to play perfectly or always up to your expectations. So if not satisfied, just know that the level of 80% is really, really good. And Cameron clearly stayed in the bubble. If you watch him, he doesn't, it's not that he's aloof in any way, but he's not outwardly expressive. He doesn't acknowledge the crowd in big ways. He was in a bubble, approaching that the next shot. And folks, having played somewhat competitively at levels way below that, I know that I get ahead of myself often. I'm sure a lot of you do as well, thinking, I'm playing well or I'm not playing well, and I'm looking ahead to making a few more birdies, or man, this round is never going to end kind of thing. With Cameron Young, he realizes that. Let's hear these clips from him as he acknowledges exactly what golf is for him and a lot of people, and how he's worked to overcome some of the mental challenges that he's had.
This is a hard game, and there's a lot of people that are really good at it. So my mind for the first part of this season is preparing for the Masters. You know, my goal was to be in contention as much as possible before that. You know, this tournament certainly has a major feel. The Players is an unbelievable event. And so today it was mostly that I just was pretty under control. You know, I feel like I kept really good control in my mind made really good decisions. And, you know, it didn't have to work out that I won, but today it did. I've never been tied for the lead on the 18th tee. You know, I made the turn with a 9-shot lead or whatever at Wyndham. And so there was no point during that back nine where I felt like I needed to hit, you know, a great shot or even really a good one. I just kind of had to get the ball, you know, forward. So I haven't had really many moments like that. And yeah, like I said, first time that thoughts really popped in my mind, and I think I did, you know, what I intended. It's one of the best shots I've ever hit in my life.
Now, the tee shot at 17 was fantastic, but the drive at 18, that's one of the greatest shots that maybe he'll ever hit. In control, staying in the present, staying in the moment, much easier said than done. Cameron Young, through working with Dr. Brett McCabe, could continue to do that at major championships, and everything tells me he'll do his very best. He'll be in contention every time because the skill level is off the charts. And don't forget also, Cameron Young, he acknowledged it, having played in the Ryder Cup, being in the heat of the moment there at Bethpage last September really helped him a lot, helped him with the nerves down the stretch, and you can feed off of that. I'm going to go feed off of maybe a couple of, I don't know, alcoholic beverages, maybe a few beers somewhere, and enjoy my St. Patrick's Day. Wishing you and all of yours a very happy St. Patty's Day. I know Janice will mostly behave herself down in Houston where it's ridiculously cold. Here in South Florida, I've got to get my game face on and get ready for David Young on Thursday here at East Point Country Club. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Kelly Elbin thanking you again for joining us here on a special episode of Musings on Golf.